The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, Georgia. By the way, there's no way we lost Georgia. There's no way. That was a rigged election, but we're still fighting it, and you'll see what's going to happen. We'll talk about it, and I just want to thank you. This is some crowd. You know, Biden was here today also. They had 14 people in three cars. No, there was no way, and I just want to thank you. You know, I've had two elections. I won both of them. It's amazing. And I actually did much better on the second one. Them, as you know, there's nothing the radical Democrats will not do to get power that they so desperately crave, even the outright stealing of elections like they're trying to do with us. We're not going to let it happen over the past. And I hope Mike Pence comes through for us, I have to tell you.
There's your president of the United States last night, the final rally before the Senate runoff. Donald Trump down in Georgia trying to build momentum for Loeffler and Perdue, the two Republicans running against the radical leftists, the Marxist Democrats. And you have to wonder if Joe Biden won the presidential election in a landslide, if Joe Biden shocked the world by winning Georgia of all states, why would, and if Donald Trump, as the propaganda media is saying, if Donald Trump is undermining democracy, if he should be impeached now because of this phone call with Raffensperger and his team, why then would Perdue and Loeffler want Donald Trump to campaign? They were both there, as I understand it. Why would they even want him to campaign for them the night before the Senate runoff? It's something to think about. Hello again, everyone. Good morning to you, or good evening, good afternoon, wherever you might be listening from. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've got lots and lots of material to get to on today's program, as per usual. Quite a few clips from President Trump. Also, if we have time for a study later, we'll follow on yesterday's study about following in the steps of Christ and add to that, the admonition to do it, to follow in those steps with your whole heart. There's several examples in the Bible that we can look to of individuals that really did pour their heart into serving God. So we'll get to that in the latter part of the program. Here's another clip from the Georgia rally last night, clip four.
Over the past few weeks, we've demonstrated that we won the election in a landslide. Almost 75 million people voted for me. The most of any incumbent president in the history of our country. We won over 11 million, close to 12 million more votes than 2016, one of the largest, actually the single largest increase in the history of our country. No person that won, went to a second term, or went through an election where he got nearly 12 million votes. No, it never happened before. Never happened before. We made historic gains among African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans. And we won the largest share of non-white vote of any Republican president in 60 years. We also won 18 out of 19 bellwether counties. Now, when you win just a few bellwether counties, you always win the election. We won 18 out of 19. That's a record. And they said we didn't win. We won 25 of 26 toss-up House races.
That's a lot of victories. Right across the board, all, and these Republicans winning on the coattails of Donald Trump, they know it. They know it. That's why the two senators, or hopeful senators, have him come down and campaign for him the night before, because they know they can get in on his coattails. And yet, as one commentator put it a few weeks ago, evidently he has no coat. Evidently he can't get elected himself. Evidently he's not popular enough. He's not even nearly as popular as Joe Biden, the one who set up the most extensive voter fraud organization in the history of the United States of America. The Democrats are concerned because this is a president, as you'll hear later, who will not give up. And he is exposing the steal. The fix was in from the beginning, and he is exposing it. There was talk yesterday. I mentioned that phone call with Brad Raffensperger's team. And then, of course, the commentators come right out and say, well, he should be impeached again. Why? Why should he be impeached? He's going to be gone in 2 weeks. He's supposed to be gone in 2 weeks. You would think they'd just roll their eyes. Well, there goes Donald Trump again. No, they're saying impeach. They're saying prosecute. They're saying, because they know if the fix doesn't work, they've got to keep going after him somehow. He's exposing the steal. There was a video, Project Veritas, yet another video exposing what's happening right under Raffensperger's nose, right across the street from his office. This organization, what's it called? The Central Outreach and Advocacy Center. It's right near the state capitol. The address there, 201 Washington Street. And what Project Veritas has uncovered is the fact that there are thousands of people who voted from this address. This is an organization that's trying to, I guess, reach out to the homeless. I think it's attached maybe to a homeless shelter nearby. But it's some kind of organization that has tons of mail coming into the facility, particularly in the lead up to the November 3rd election. There was one interview in this Veritas, this undercover video, where he said that there's thousands of people. It's illegal, by the way, to register to vote from an address that you don't currently live at. Isn't it amazing that even as Raffensperger and his spokesman, Gabriel Sterling, they're out there saying there is no evidence, there is no truth to what Donald Trump is saying or tweeting. And yet it's happening right across the street. Right across the street. This one that's interviewed on this undercover video wonders aloud how many people live out of state that have registered to vote on this address, 201 Washington Street. If you're looking to vote, I guess the vote's today, so it's probably too late. But if you want an address, thousands of people are using 201 Washington Street in the heart of Atlanta. And I'm sure Brad Raffensperger's office is really concerned about this. No, you listen to them, and there's absolutely no evidence of fraud or wrongdoing whatsoever. Now, I talked yesterday about this conference call between President Trump's legal team and Brad Raffensperger, Gabe Sterling. I don't know if Sterling was on the line, but Raffensperger had his people there as well. This private discussion. And then just hours the next day, it goes right to the Washington Post. The Washington Post has the transcript, has the audio, and it's out there for all the world to see. And then, of course, right on cue, here comes the propaganda media saying, impeach! Impeach! He's been caught red-handed. He's the one guilty. Donald Trump. He's the one guilty of voter fraud. Listen to Brad Raffensperger yesterday. This was in an interview, the reporter asking him about this leaked tape. This is clip 8.
If the president hadn't tweeted and tweeted something that was false, would we have ever heard that call recording?
No, it was a private conversation as far as I was concerned. And he broke privacy when he put out a tweet, but then his tweet was false.
So there he admits it. Yeah, we released the audio. I got offended. I was offended by a tweet. So we had to release everything. Now, just think about this. This man is supposedly a Republican. This is the kind of thing that never, never, never would have happened during the years of Obama. You cannot imagine a prominent Democrat from any state challenging Barack Obama. He was to be revered. And if you did challenge him, you were punished. You were punished. Not so in this case. You've got Raffensperger speaking out. You've got Gabriel Sterling. I'll play a clip from him in just a moment. The governor of Georgia. Right across the Republican Party. It's like I said yesterday. They're in war, and they don't even know it. They're not even fighting for their survival. They just want Donald Trump to give up and go away. Just move on. Just move on. Nothing to see here. He mentioned the president's tweet. Well, if he wouldn't have tweeted, I wouldn't have sent out the audio. The Trump campaign, by the way, has filed a lawsuit against Raffensperger for doing this. So he may be in some big trouble. I think I saw a tweet, too, where it's been released to, or rather, the Trump campaign's turned it over to the DOJ as well. In any event, this is the tweet that President Trump sent out Sunday. And keep in mind, the phone conference was Saturday night. So then the next day, the president tweeted, I spoke to Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger yesterday about Fulton County and voter fraud in Georgia. He was unwilling or unable to answer questions such as ballots under table scam, ballot destruction, out-of-state voters, dead voters, and more. He has no clue. And you listen to the audio recording that Raffensperger leaked. You listen to the audio recording and you see that tweet is completely right. It's completely true. He had no response to the ballots under the table, the ballot destruction, the dead people voting, all of these out-of-state voters. And then you have this Project Veritas video coming out just yesterday. 201 Washington Street. Thousands and thousands of voters. They're all lit. I guess they're living in there, just crammed together, one on top of another. If not, it's illegal. If you don't live there, it's illegal to vote from an address that you don't live at. So Raffensperger tweets out, no, you're wrong. You've got bad information. And then he releases the audio because he's so terribly offended by one of President Trump's tweets. Yesterday morning, Raffensperger announced that he was going to have a big press conference in the afternoon. And then by the time the press conference arrived, Raffensperger was nowhere to be seen. And it was Gabriel Sterling who came out, his spokesman. He's the one, remember, who lost it because of some mean emails that his people had received, or Republicans had received, even threats, evidently. I don't think anything came of that. They continue to complain about that sort of thing, even as Antifa and Black Lives Matter, they're out roaming the streets, beating people up, hitting them with clubs. Listen to the Georgia Secretary of State spokesman. This is Gabriel Sterling, just yesterday, clip two.
One of the things specifically I've had to argue with people whom I've known for 20 years, they say, well, we feel like our election was stolen. We feel like our votes don't count. And I said, okay, I'm not acknowledging that the election was stolen because it wasn't. I'm not acknowledging that there was massive voter fraud because there wasn't. But I said, but if you believe in your heart of hearts that there was, the best thing for you to do is to turn out and vote and make it harder for them to steal.
There's a winning campaign strategy. If they're cheating, just turn out. Hey, let's turn out the vote and try to make it harder for them to cheat. How about if we prosecute the cheaters and the thieves? How about if we go after the ones that are breaking the law? For instance, if they register to vote using an address where they don't live, that's a felony. How about if we take that on head on? No, you don't hear that. You hear comments like that. laughable comments. Well, if you believe they're cheating, well, then just get out and vote. Get out and vote, and let's try to make it a little bit harder for them. What these people don't understand, as and the president has pointed this out. He pointed it out last night. If they don't stand against this now, they're never going to win. They're never going to win another election. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens in Georgia today because, as President Trump said last night, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to carry out their thievery when the whole world is watching just the one state. On November 3rd, there were 7 or 8 states involved in the fraud, and they all did it under the cover of darkness. In the case of Georgia, it was the water main break that turned out to be the urinal that was leaking. Everything shut down in the middle of the night. And then when everything flipped on, 3-4 hours later, suddenly Joe Biden was ahead. Suddenly it happened in the dark of night. Listen to Donald Trump last night at the Georgia rally, clip 5.
When they don't fight, one thing I've learned about Republicans, they have some difficulties, but you know a difficulty that they don't have? They never forget. They never forget. And people are going to find that out because we have to go and we have to go all the way. And that's what's happening. And you watch what happens over the next couple of weeks. You watch what's going to come out. Watch what's going to be revealed. You watch.
That's the president last night. Let's watch what plays out over the next couple of weeks. Loeffler and Perdue, they wanted him there. Loeffler announced yesterday that if she wins today, that she'll join the other 12 senators that are contesting the election. So that'll make 13. I don't know if there's another one that was added to the mix or two maybe yesterday. We'll see. But why would she campaign on that? Here it comes right up to the last day before the Senate runoff. And why would she come out and say, I'm going to join the senators who contest the Electoral College count on Wednesday? Well, she's obviously saying that because it's in her mind, it's a winning strategy. Again, I don't know if Loeffler or Perdue are that enthusiastically supporting President Trump the way that they should be, but still, it comes right down to the wire, and she says, all right, I'm going to join those, Josh Hawley and others, that have said, hey, this is rigged. This is a steal, and it needs to be overturned. There's only a few that are willing to stand up. As I said on yesterday's program, it's pretty much Stacey Abrams who drew up the election rules for the November 3rd election. Raffensperger and his team just basically stepped aside and let Stacey Abrams do what she wanted to do, the radical Democrat. Listen to what the president had to say about Ms. Abrams, clip 6.
What's with this Stacey Abrams? You know, your governor and your secretary of state, they're petrified of Stacey Abrams. What's that all about? Did you see this consent decree they signed? With signature verification, you can forget about it. What they have done to your state, I think most people have no idea. What they've done to your state, that consent decree of these two people, I don't know. They say they're Republicans. I really don't think they are. They can't be.
What is it with Stacey Abrams? Why won't they stand up to her? President Trump is about the only one. We'll see how much fraud they get away with today. Perhaps not as much as they did on November 3rd. But who will stand up to Stacey Abrams in Georgia? It's the president coming from Washington, D.C. He's the only one that will do it. And he's standing against a lot. He's resisting against a tidal wave of resistance. Here he is, one last clip last night in Georgia, clip 7.
Our fight to drain the Washington swamp and reclaim America's destiny and dignity has only just begun. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. because we are Americans and we are from Georgia. And our hearts bleed red, white, and blue.
Now you contrast that rally with, as he said in the opening, the Joe Biden honking horn rally. A few people turning out for Joe Biden after he supposedly got the most votes in U.S. history. Doesn't add up. And here's President Trump exposing all of this evil. He's proven, like my father has said, he's proven himself. He's proven himself willing to take a stand where others will not. And as I say, what an army he's having to go against. You have the Democrat Party. You have the propaganda media. You have big tech. You have popular culture. You have social media, all of it together. You have a lot of governments abroad, again, working against him. They certainly were in 2016 as well. We'll see how many people turn out for his rally tomorrow in Washington, D.C. Huge rally following, or rather anticipating, what happens in Congress tomorrow afternoon with the Electoral College count. The mayor of Washington, D.C., by the way, she's deploying the National Guard because she's concerned about the Trump rally. It's the Trump people that are supposedly violent. This is another narrative that the media has been pushing over the past year. One of the Proud Boys leaders, Enrique Tarrero, he's a black man, but he heads up this movement. They're strong supporters of President Trump. He was arrested yesterday just coming out of the D.C. airport on charges of burning a Black Lives Matter flag. It might be a hate crime. I guess he was carrying some ammunition as well. And so they got him. They got him right away. This is the D.C. police. They're quick to respond. If it's Trump people, they move fast. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., you have Antifa attacking Josh Hawley's house. This is the senator leading against the electoral count. He's contesting it. He was the first one to announce that he was going to contest it. And his house comes under attack just last night. Hawley's in Missouri. His wife and his newborn baby is in the Washington, D.C. house. She can't travel. She's at home with the baby. And so here is these Antifa thugs attacking Mr. Hawley's house. And you hear very little about it. You wouldn't hear anything about it were it not for Josh Hawley tweeting it. It's like two Americas, isn't it? You get into these deep, dark blue cities with these radical mayors who hate the president of the United States. They deploy the National Guard if there's anything associated with Trump. And yet you have in some cases, older people, some of them elderly, exiting the White House, you remember a few months ago, and they were getting shouted down by Antifa. And in some cases, objects thrown at them, being pummeled in some cases. Two Americas, what's happening in the United States? And look at the past year, the violence spreading through the streets. I thought it was interesting last week. I didn't have time to play these yesterday, but leading up to, I guess, the New Year's celebration, something or another, it was in Portland, and Antifa is still... Donald Trump's supposedly on the way out, but Antifa is still just causing mayhem and destruction in Portland. It's still going on. And the major media could care less. They have no interest in this story. None whatsoever. This was one of the county sheriffs near Portland who was reporting on the violence in Portland, the Antifa violence in Portland, New Year's Eve, clip 9.
The violence last night was criminal and reprehensible. It was a focused attack on the Justice Center. We saw a large fire at 2nd and Main. Store windows that had been broken out and debris filling the street in front of Central Precinct. The building itself had come under attack. That there had been an attempt to breach the Justice Center. and that individuals had tried to force their way into the building. Commercial rockets were being fired at the building, and a Molotov cocktail had been thrown as well, which drew the Federal Police Services out, and they came under attack. They were attacked with commercial rockets, fireworks, and bottles filled with paint and rocks the size of baseballs.
Never mind any of that. I mean, we've got to get the Proud Boys leader. We've got to make sure we get him out of the way. Here are these government buildings coming under attack. And then this police chief comes out. He goes through it in detail, and it's just another ho-hum story. This was the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler. Evidently, he's finally waking up to the fact that Antifa is a violent organization. Here's your mayor of Portland, clip 10.
My good faith efforts at de-escalation have been met with ongoing violence and even scorn from radical Antifa and anarchists. In response, it will be necessary to use additional tools and to push the limits of the tools we already have to bring the criminal destruction and violence to an end. It's time to push back harder against those who are set on destroying our community and to take more risks in fighting lawlessness.
That was Ted Wheeler over the weekend saying it's time to push back against these violent thugs. That's what he says today. Guess what he said back in August when there was all this violence in his city? He was out there with Antifa, remember? And then he had to make his escape. Then they were surrounding his apartment building. Now he's finally saying it's time to push back. Listen to what he said back, I think this is August 30th, just a few months ago, clip 11.
Yesterday's events began with hundreds of cars filled with supporters of the president rallying in Clackamas County and then driving through downtown Portland. They were supported and energized by the president himself.
Then it was the president's fault. It was President Trump and his supporters that were causing, they were causing the violence. One more statement from August 30th, clip 12.
You want me to stop the violence that you helped create.
That's what Ted Wheeler said in August about President Trump. President Trump created the violence. Well, now he's supposed to be gone in a couple of weeks, and the violence continues. And here is Ted Wheeler saying, hey, I've been a nice guy through all of this, and I've been met with violence from Antifa. Now he's finally telling the truth. Why didn't he tell the truth back in August? Why didn't he tell the truth back in September? Well, someone should ask him. A reporter should ask him. It's going to continue. And, of course, we know about the prophecies in Ezekiel regarding the oncoming civil war and these two sides, these two camps, these two Americas. You can see both so clearly. Over in the UK, by the way, yesterday they went back into lockdown. 15 days to stop the spread. Well, in defense of the UK, I think that was what President Trump and his team said back in March. I don't know if the UK said that, but here we are. Here we are, January 5th, and we're into the first day of yet another lockdown. Is this number two or three for the UK? Here's Prime Minister Johnson last night with his televised announcement in the UK. Clip one.
In England, we must therefore go into a national lockdown, which is tough enough to contain this variant. That means the government is once again instructing you to stay at home. You may only leave home for limited reasons permitted in law. And because we now have to do everything we possibly can to stop the spread of the disease, primary schools, secondary schools, and colleges across England must move to remote provision from tomorrow.
And so there you go. One of his representatives is saying the lockdown is to continue through to March. To March. So a full year. Yet another lockdown. And meanwhile, the death rate, let's just look at the overall death rate in the UK. This winter, it's lower than it was in 2016. It's lower than it was in 2017. And that, you can find that out from the UK government's own websites, their own statistics. The death rate overall, lower than it was just 2, 3, 4 years ago. And yet everything completely locked down. You look at the way governments are handling this crisis. What a disaster. They've just made it so much worse for the people of Britain, for the people of the United States, for so many people living in Western nations primarily. There's this flu going around. And so let's destroy people's businesses. Let's destroy their businesses. Let's keep them from earning a living. And all the voices out there saying, let's do this, of course, their salaries continue. Their salaries in some cases are getting much bigger. While the little man, the ordinary man, suffers. That's the truth of it. There's another story here about the BBC's reporting on children, lying really about children and COVID. We know from the statistics now that they're very low risk. And yet here are these schools now being told to go into remote or distant learning now because of COVID-19. Another strain, another variant. When will this stop? It continues. This craziness, the craziness of 2021, or I should say 2020, it continues, doesn't it? It continues right into 2021. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times. But it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Yesterday, we went through a few scriptures about following in the steps of Jesus Christ, the memory verse there in 1 Peter 2. I mentioned this example, too, of Caleb in Numbers 14, verses 22 through 24, where it says that he has followed me. God said about Caleb, he has followed me fully. These two, Caleb and Joshua, they went into Canaan and they saw the promised land and they came back with a good report. Quite unlike the other spies who were terrified. They didn't have the courage to stand up to enemies, to stand up to the resistance. Only Joshua and Caleb. And as my father said in the former prophet's book, I mean, this is the kind of spirit that God wants to build in us. The spirit that Caleb had, the spirit that Joshua had. Let me read to you a few verses about Joshua in particular. This is Joshua 14, starting in verse 6. And it says, "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him," so this is Caleb speaking here, "you know the thing that the Eternal said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and you, in Kadesh Barnea." This is Moses' take on Joshua and Caleb. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Eternal, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land. And I brought him word again, as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt." See, they got the negativity, the false reporting, the propaganda. It spread. The lies, the deception, it spread right through the camp. And the entire camp of Israel was terrified because of this evil report. That's what it was. That's the way God viewed it. You can read about that again. Go back into Numbers 14 and see the whole story there, Numbers 13 and 14. But Caleb says here in Joshua 14, "But I wholly followed the Lord my God, and Moses swear on that day, saying, surely the land whereon your feet have trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God." See, Moses really praised Caleb and Joshua for not only following in the steps of God, but doing it wholeheartedly, putting their whole hearts into God's way of life, wholeheartedly, sincerely, earnestly going in the direction of God and His law. That is the way of a Christian. You look into the New Testament about the, like Romans 12, where it talks about being a living sacrifice. That's what God wants of us, being willing to follow God, even through trials and tests, even when times get difficult, even when it looks like all is lost. We hope on, don't we? We still have hope. We still have faith. Herbert Armstrong wrote back in, I don't have the exact date. I think it was from the 1960s, but he says here, "God has never intended our lives yielded to Him for His service to be a proverbial soft bed of roses. God has not intended our Christian lives in His service to run smooth and easy with no problems, no concerns. God intended, ordained, that we should be confronted with continual problems, difficulties, troubles, that we should have to make constant sacrifices, learning to give up our own ways and wants, even some of our money and the things we want to buy with it." See, God's ordained that we give up certain things, that we make sacrifices for God. It's a struggle. It's the straight and narrow way. Now, Caleb and Joshua didn't come back from spying the land and say, "Yeah, it'll be easy. We'll just walk right in and everyone will leave." They spoke the truth. They said, well, yes, there are inhabitants there, but God will take care of that. God will fight for us. God will give us this land. He's promised it to us. What are we willing to do to take the promised land, to take the kingdom, as Jesus said, by force? That's in the New Testament. I mean, we've got to really have some, not just a wholeheartedness about our Christian walk, but we've got to be courageous and bold. I've talked on this in recent programs as well. But coming back to this point of wholeheartedness, think about what Paul said in Colossians 3 and verse 23. "Whatever you do, do it heartily. Do it heartily as to the Eternal and not to men." Don't do it to please men, but wholeheartedly serve God. Another memory verse in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, "Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might." Do it with your might. Put everything you have into it. There's so many wonderful examples of this in the Bible, not just Joshua and Caleb. Consider the example of Hezekiah. This is just one verse in 2 Chronicles. But note what it says here about Hezekiah, King Hezekiah of Judah, 2 Chronicles 31 and verse 21. It says, "And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, and in the law, and in the commandments, to seek his God, he did it with all his heart and prospered." He did it with his whole heart, and he prospered. God blessed him, in other words. He poured his heart in. I love the way that it says, every work that he began, every work that he started. How easy is it to start something that might be challenging? Maybe it's exciting, but it's going to be a real challenge. It's going to be a real fight. And we start off with gusto, only to find out that it just kind of fizzles out the next day or two. We've all gone through that. Here it says that what we start with gusto, we've got to keep it. We've got to keep driving forward with the energy to stay on course. Joel Hilliker, in a lecture he gave at our ministerial conference a week ago with respect to physical health, he gave an excellent lecture on that subject, but he talked about how easy it is to commit to a healthier lifestyle and then to just see it get completely derailed, because it's so easy to just revert back to, you know, what is comfortable and easy. It's easy to be unhealthy. It's hard to improve your health. It's hard to gain strength, especially as you get older. And as I say, it's a fight. It's a fight to fight against what comes easy and natural, just drifting along with everyone else, and to actually make a stand. You think of that last clip, that final clip from President Trump that I played. We will not surrender. We will not give up. There's a spirit there that, spiritually speaking, we really and truly do want to emulate and follow. There's a verse about Jeremiah, the prophet. He said, "With my whole heart have I sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments." That's the prophet Jeremiah telling God, and, you know, he's not just blowing smoke. He's saying it sincerely. "I have sought you with my whole heart." Can we say that about our spiritual relationship, our relationship with God, the energy, the fervency that we put into our prayers, our Bible study? Do we seek God with our whole heart? Listen to what the Apostle Paul says. This is taken from Ephesians 6. This is the chapter about the armor of God, an inspiring chapter, a motivating chapter, and a chapter that reveals what we need in our battle against the devil. We are at war, and we have to recognize that and prepare each day for battle. Ephesians 6:10, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." See, we've got to be able to stand. How are we going to stand against the devil and his attacks? Well, by putting on the armor of God. It takes the armor of God to stand strong in this battle we're in. Verse 12 says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore," verse 13, "take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand." You've got to put on all of this. And Paul goes on to list all of the elements of this armor, all of the pieces that we're to put on: the helmet, the breastplate, the girdle, now all of it. We need it all. We need the whole armor, because that's what it takes to do all that we can to stand strong against the devil, to fight in this fight that we're in. Now, that requires every day drawing nearer to God. Paul said that the outward man perishes, but the inward man is renewed day by day. So it's a constant renewal process, putting on that armor each day. It's just like it would be on the physical battlefield, fighting through the day. Then you retire back to the barracks. You can take off the armor, get hopefully a good night of rest, and then the next day starts and you put it all back on. Spiritually, what does that mean for us? Well, we've got to do the daily prayers, the daily study, the daily meditation, the daily fellowship with God and His family. Our hearts being fully in the work, wholly in the work. Caleb followed God with his whole heart. And that's what God is looking for in all of us. There's so many wonderful examples of this in Scripture. There's a few bad ones as well. One of them in 1 Kings 11 about King Solomon. He started off on he started off with gusto. And thankfully he finished on a high note as well, but he had some problems in between. And God addresses those in 1 Kings 11. It talks about all of these strange gods that he turned to, strange women. He had all the wives and the concubines, just immersed himself into the things of this world. And it says there in 1 Kings 11 and verse 4, that it turned his heart away from God. His heart, it says, was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. That's 1 Kings 11 and verse 4. He didn't have a heart like his father did. David's heart was just like God's, as you can see in Acts 13. He had his sins as well, but he repented toward God. He really mastered repentance. Continuing in 1 Kings 11, verse 6 says, "And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Eternal and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father." You see, he wasn't wholehearted. He was half-hearted. He was half-heartedly following in the steps of David, but he didn't do it wholeheartedly, and this was a big problem. When the pressure came, he collapsed under it at this period in his life. And God was really upset by this, because as it says in verse 9, he appeared to Solomon twice. Solomon had all of this God-given wisdom. He had this intimate relationship with God early on. And yet, the ways of this world, the women of the world, it turned his heart away from God. Well, just to conclude on this positive note, Joshua and Caleb, what an example these two were in a congregation, in a nation that really didn't have a heart to obey. Joshua and Caleb were different. And in Joshua 24 and verse 15, it says this about Joshua: "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Eternal, choose you this day." This is Joshua's admonition to the people of Israel. Choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me, says Joshua, as for me and my house, we will serve the Eternal. As for me, as for my wife, as for my children, we're going to obey God. We're going to follow in the steps of God. And we're going to do it wholeheartedly. That's what God expects of his elite leaders. That's what we are in the Church of God today. The leaders, the teachers, the rulers of tomorrow. And he wants this kind of character. He wants this kind of wholeheartedness. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some viewer feedback that we've been getting over the last few days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
A few comments here from some of our viewers and listeners. This one says, congratulations and thank you to Stephen Flory for meeting the 2020 TDRS goal of hosting well over 200 episodes. And a big thank you to Mr. Richard Palmer for ending 2020 with the TDRS Show of the Year, Lessons from Our Editor-in-Chief. That was the December 31st broadcast that Richard did last Thursday, I think it was. What an absolutely fantastic review of Mr. Fleury's, Gerald Fleury's, that is. Gerald Fleury's tireless proclamations of God's end-time prophecies and hope-filled messages to all who will read, listen, and watch. And now 2021 begins with resolution to the massive fraud in the U.S. presidential election right around God's miracle days, referring there, of course, to January 16. Another one in response to Richard's show Thursday says, this was an excellent review of the 2020 articles from our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury. It took us over 2 hours to watch it and write 3 full pages of notes. Wow, excellent show. You can get to this, by the way, at thetrumpet.com website or kpcg.fm if you'd like to hear that broadcast from last Thursday. We can't imagine a better job being done than your review. Another one here says, I like the focus on health in the first program of the calendar year. So this goes back to the show I did Friday, I believe, the day after Richard's. It says here, I've actually been a bit obsessed with one aspect of health over the last 2 weeks. I did a 3-day liquid fast over the past weekend. I had a lot of spare time to Google and research about intermittent fasting, low-calorie dieting, and the keto diet. I've been interested in exercising since I was a teenager, but I've come to realize that exercise is great for building and training the body, but the key to weight loss is fasting. You have to put the body in fat-burning mode as opposed to running off of food for fuel. That's a comment I know my wife will appreciate. She's listening at home. She teaches nutrition here at the college. But that last point there made, you have to put the body in fat-burning mode as opposed to running off of food for fuel. Another one here says, I'm glad I have been following your broadcast for almost a year. Meanwhile, I haven't been viewing or listening to almost anything from the mainstream media for over a decade, as it's been distorted to say the least. It says here, thank God you are blessed and enlightened to receive and to broadcast to us the truth and to give us hope in a more and more hopeless world. My thanks to all of you there for your time and dedication to the truth. A few shorter ones here. It says, excellent presenter, explained with facts. Thank you for bringing the light. It says here, I don't know why there is such a hullabaloo about fraud. It's only the presidency of the most powerful nation ever to exist. Who cares? A bit of tongue-in-cheek there. It says here, let's see, further on. Thank you for this review. This is in response to Richard's show again. Thank you for this review of the year through a spiritual dimension. It's It's far too easy to let the revealing events of the past to slip from our memory. And that certainly is true. This program has strengthened my determination to remember the past events in a spiritual way and to strengthen my faith. Looking forward to more programs in the year ahead. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show. We thank you for joining us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And we'll see you again tomorrow.